This is the podcast that we ask our guests from in front and behind the camera, how did they get their foot in the door? What was the key to unlocking their success? What's their story?
Our guest today started his career with a bang, starring opposite Al Pacino in Brian De Palma's classic Carlito's Way. Since then, he hasn't stopped, working with some of the greats, including Michael Mann, Ridley Scott, and Steven Spielberg. He's been in some of the biggest blockbusters of all time, including Transformers, Fast and Furious, and King Kong. But he's also had time to work on critically hailed projects such as Silver Linings Playbook, Ad Astra, and his latest, American Fiction. Our guest today is actor Jon Ortiz.
Is this for me?
Yeah, well, that's my old iPod.
Oh, but... buddy, thank you. Oh, that's so nice of you. Wow.
32 gigabytes.
How many songs is that?
7,000.
Yeah, listen. Oh, yeah, you got the Stranglers. You love the Stranglers. Oh, the Sex Pistols. The Clash.
Custom Clash.
Oh, West Side Story.
Yeah, West Side Story. Makes
West
me
Side
peaceful.
Story.
Maria. Just met a girl named Maria.
Right, right,
and
right.
And then when I'm angry, which is a lot these days, I go to the garage. Metallica. Megadeth. I start fucking smashing shit.
You gotta get your marriage together.
I start breaking shit, and I hurt my hand. And I...
Right, that's fucked up.
Yeah, but it makes me feel better. It's like my therapy, you know?
Hey, Elliot.
Hi, man. How's it going?
Great, brother. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well. I'm very well. I've been a fan for many years, so it's a real pleasure. I'd love to ask how your career started, how all of this began. And I did notice that one of your first credits is one of my favorite all-time films, Carlito's Way, which is an absolute banger. De Palma, obviously, I mean, that's a big project for your first job. How did that come about? How was that your one of your first projects?
That was my first film.
Wow, really? That's not bad. That is a strong start.
Yeah. It's easy, you know, it starts there. Everything else after that is a cakewalk. That was an audition, and and I knew it was like major because it was Al Pacino and Brian De Palma.
Yeah.
And that's all I knew at the time. But I knew like that world, you know, and I'm Puerto Rican, and so the writer is, and it's set in Spanish Harlem, where I would often go to visit friends and family. So I knew that world. It was in the 70s. But, you know, I never acted in film before, you know, so like there was, but I took it like as seriously as I could take anything up to that point in my life, you know. And there was a, you know, there was a seriousness, but there was also this thing of just, you know, ignorance is bliss, you know. Mm-hmm. And I had and I think that worked mostly to my favor. Mm. Because the character is so innocent, you know, he's so naive, you know, even though he's doing what he's doing. And I think that was just who I was. You know, I literally, you know, I think I might have had just a handful of auditions leading up to that.
Wow. That's mad.
It's just like I auditioned for the casting director. She was legendary and still is to this day, Bonnie Timmerman. And she, I'll never forget, after the audition, she tells me to wait outside, and I thought that was great. You know, I was like, wow, that was, you know, I made it, you know, I didn't know what she was going to tell me. So I waited outside and she came out and she was super serious. And she was like, listen to me. That was very good. I'm going to bring you back to meet up Brian De Palma.
What?
So just so you know.
I bet you were like,
all right, All right. And you know, I'm psyched. But then the that took a long time. It took like weeks, but I was like so happy, and like, you know, it was, you know, like it wasn't like I wasn't anxious about it. I wasn't like worried that the call wasn't happening fast enough. You know, I was just like, this is amazing. Someday I'm gonna meet Brian De Palma.
Yeah.
And she said that, so that's gonna happen. And sure enough, it took weeks, maybe over a month.
Wow.
But it happened. Actually, you know what? It took several months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it took several months because the holidays happened, and it was in January, or maybe even February, and I met her like in November. So took months, and I knew this was it. It was my next and final callback, and it was in Marty Bregman's office, his their offices. So that was already like a big thing too, and I just remember doing a lot of push-ups, and I went in, and I basically did what I did with Bonnie. You know, I just tried to do the same thing. I knew it a little better, the scene. And Brian De Palma might have given me an adjustment, but I knew it went well, and I did it again, and there was no, you know, and yeah, I waited maybe a couple of weeks and I got the part.
Man, that's insane. Did when you actually stepped foot on set with Brian De Palma, and you know, obviously it's like this big film, Al Pacino's in it. I mean, what were the nerves like first time on set and it being that film?
Yeah, it was you know, I often think about it because, again, it's like maybe it's youth and the ignorant factor, but I was just more excited, you know. I was just like pumped. I was just like, this is it. Like, this is what I want to do, and it's happening, you know. And I think the nerves came out through that, but the nerves and whatever you might think would like hold you back never overcame the positive excitement, joy of like, this is everything I want to do with my life, and it's happening right now. You
That's
know, like
amazing.
that, like, and so I think about that a lot because, you know, and I'll never forget, I was doing a play before that, and a veteran actress stopped me sometime during the run, and we were talking, and she told me something like, you know, don't ever change. You know, don't ever change. And like I had that kind of enthusiasm then, you know, and I didn't quite know what she meant. But she might have said something about like this business, it can bring you down, you can have nerves, you know, and you can, she didn't say this, but I think she said, don't become jaded, you know, which I often saw in people pretty early on, and people who I
Really?
thought, you have no reason to be jaded, man. Like, you're like the cream of the crop, you know. You're amazing. You're so talented. Like, why you're only hurting yourself, you know. So like, I understood that pretty early on, but I also know it's just life, you know. Life can very easily bring folks down, and a turn happens, you know. So anyway, so I often think about those, but you know, I will say that I had like, because it was such a big movie and big production, and the budget was really big, especially at that time. I mean, it was 1993, and like I think the budget was like $60 million, you know, for like,
Mad.
you know, I mean, there was some action, but it wasn't like what we think of a Marvel movie being or some other action movie being like now, you know. So, you know, we were shooting, we had a cushy schedule. I went in for rehearsals. I went, and every step of it, they were like really impressive, legendary folks that I would like read about and be like, oh my God, that person did that and that and that. And like, I remember seeing that as a kid or whatever. My parents would talk about that film. And we shot in a studio. But I'll tell you, there were two moments where it was like, oh wow. One was a table read where it
Well, that
was
must
a
be
big,
nerve-wracking.
yeah. It was the first table read, and it was like a big room. It was like a conference room, but there were so many people in there that like it was like in a U shape, and the only way to fit the amount of people in that room was that you would be almost up against the wall with with desks in front of tables in front of you, right? And so there was no room. And like, I'm looking around and I'm seeing Brian De Palma, and there's Al Pacino, there's Sean Penn,
Oh, of course,
all
Sean
these people.
Penn's in
And
it,
it's
isn't he?
like,
Amazing.
and it's like time to go, but we're not going. And I'm like, what's going on? We wait 10 minutes. I start seeing like movement in the room. We're still not starting. Al Pacino is there. Sean Penn is there. The director, Brian De Palma, says, like, why aren't we starting? Maybe like 20 minutes later, the door bursts open and we all look, and it's Viggo Mortensen. And we were waiting for Viggo Mortensen. But we were waiting for Viggo Mortensen because the great Viggo Mortensen is such a real deal actor artist that he shows up in a wheelchair as his
Wow.
character. And he not
Wow.
only shows up in the wheelchair, but he refuses to get up and make his way into his spot, which is on the opposite end of the room. And everyone is now forced to like get up. We're already like bunched in there, squeezed in up against the wall. Everyone had to like get up, take the chairs out, push the tables further in, and he wheeled himself into the opposite end of the room.
That is
And I was
amazing.
like, wow, this is amazing. I will
To
never forget this moment.
have the balls to do that as well is just
Yeah.
hats off.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. But Pacino was amazing with me, and like, of course, he was everything to me. Like, I like idolized him as a kid. I thought, that's the epitome of what a real actor is all about, and he just took me under his wing, man, and was like really just took me in and like took care of me. And there were times like, this is kind of a story. I know we might be up against it, but do you want to hear a
Yeah, I do.
pretty
Yeah,
cool out?
definitely, of course. Yeah.
Okay. So it's the first sequence we shoot takes a really long time. It was, I think, scheduled for about a week, and it's the shootout scene, the big famous shootout scene that ends with my death. And it was scheduled for a week. We went over, and we went so over that it was now up against Al Pacino, having to have his plane basically wait until we wrap so he can fly to LA for the Oscars, because he's nominated for two Oscars that year,
Wow.
and one was for Scent of a Woman, and which he won for, and the other was Dick Tracy.
He was nominated for Dick Tracy. That is an amazing role, to be fair, but I'm surprised that film got nominated just because it's so mad. Like, they would never get nominated now. Wow,
But
amazing.
that's how, at the height of his career he was. He was
Yeah.
Al Pacino, 1993, so the last thing we're shooting is my actual death shot, in which it's a long shot, and it starts off with him in the bathroom because he's locked in there, and he finally says, "That's it. I reloaded. I'm coming out. You
I
want to play
love
big time? You're
it.
gonna die big time.
Yeah.
You think you're big time? You're gonna fucking die big time."
And he kicks the door open, and the camera follows him over his shoulder, and he walks, and he notices a body on the floor in a pool of blood, and it's me. And I'm out because I just had my neck slit. And he reaches down and says, "I told you there are no friends in this business, primo." And he kisses me or does something to me that's affectionate and emotional, but he takes the money and he leaves. Okay, so we're doing it. And at this point, I had been up for close to 24 hours straight. I mean, I had like an hour or two of sleep because we were shooting basically around the clock, and I had to show up super early to get the prosthetic for my neck. So all day I was on coffee. I was on caffeine. And it's now, what, I don't know, 9 or 10 o'clock at night, and it's the last thing. We're already in overtime. I had been there since like 3:30 in the morning. It's 10 o'clock at night. I'm all on caffeine. We go to shoot, and it's like, basically this is a wanner, And so I'm coming out, bang, he comes in. There's a beautiful shot. It's over his shoulder. It lands on me. Cut. I would hear Brian De Palma. He's like, "Let's do it again." Goes in again, and I'm like, goes in again, goes up to my face, cut. And everyone's like, "What's going on?" And I'm not saying anything. I'm just like supposedly dead. And this is my first movie. I didn't say a word if I didn't have to. And I hear Pacino's like getting like, agitated, and he's like, "Got a plane to catch. What's, what's happening?" He's like, "Yeah, it's just some movement happening when we get to John, and I'm overhearing this, And he's like, "All right, well, come on, let's, I gotta get to LA, and the drivers are waiting and all this, And the palm's like, "All right, it's simple. All right, let's do it again." Coming out, bang, comes over his shoulder, lands on me, cut. Dead man blinking. He yells. And he comes over to me. He's like, "What's going on?" I'm like, "Oh, it's me. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I can do it." And I didn't even finish whatever I was gonna say. He goes over to Pacino and he says something like, "It's all right. We're gonna definitely do it on this. I'm just gonna stay on you." And I'm like, "Fuck." And I just hear this and I'm thinking, "That's it. I'm a fraud. I'm not really an actor. I can't even act dead, but I was not only did I have the caffeine in me, and I was causing the jittery, the flickering of the eyes, but I was nervous, especially because I was never in this kind of situation, and all the insecurities are creeping up, of like, I'm not as great as they are. I was so lucky to even get this job, but my most important moment of me, like, lying there in this beautiful shot, I'm not even gonna be in now. And I'm thinking all these thoughts, and it's pathetic. I'm like in a pool of fake blood, and this is what I'm thinking. And they're having this consultation thing happening at like right there with an earshot. And all of a sudden, Pacino's like, "You know what? I want everybody out of the room. I want everybody out. And he tells his assistant to clear the room. And everyone's leaving the room, including Brian De Palma. And I'm like, again, I'm like curled up in a ball on the floor. And I'm like, all right, I guess I gotta get up, you know. And I'm like, you know, plying myself away from the sticky fake blood. And Pacino reaches over to me. He's like, no, stay. I'm like, all right. And then I'm just there. And he's like, yeah, these people were getting on my nerves. You know, I just needed to, hey, Jimmy, can you get me an espresso? And he's like, Johnny, you want an espresso? And I'm like, that's the last thing I should be having at this point, right? But it's Al Pacino offering me an espresso. I'm like, yeah, I'll have an espresso. He's like, all right, Jimmy, two espressos. And he's like, get up. And I get up and we go over to the bar, you know, the counter area. And I don't know what we're talking about. Jimmy comes over with the espresso. We have the espresso. He's like, yeah, I just need an espresso. And I'll get these people out of here. We have it. He's like, are you good? I'm like, yeah. He's like, all right. Jimmy, call him in. And we set up the shot. It's over my shoulder. Boom, it's creeping up. And right at that point, I would hear cut. It's silence. And the camera continues. And Pacino does his touch to me. And I'm just like, I'm actually getting emotional thinking about it. But I'm like, oh my God, it's happening. And he grabs the money and he says the line, he grabs the money, he leaves. And then I hear, cut, we got it. And everyone applauds, you know, and everyone's rushing over to Pacino to wish him good luck for the Oscars, you know, and they're all around him. I'm still in the pool of blood and I'm looking at him, you know, and he's walking towards the exit of the door. And it was like, you know, I'm saying it. And in my mind, it's like music was swelling at this point, right? There's like this imaginary score in my brain, you know, as a kid. And I'm looking at him, you know, and he stops. And he turns back to the room as, you know, there's a crowd around him. And he turns back to the room and he's like, if I win them both, I ain't coming back. And he leaves. And I'm like, that is the coolest dude on this planet, you know.
What a legend. Wow.
Yeah.
That is mad. The pressure, the absolute pressure. And he sounds like a genuine, like, gentleman to... As you say, he looked after you there and made sure you were all right. And I'm dying to rewatch it now. It's one of my favorite films. Girlfriend hasn't seen it, and I've been trying to get her to watch it. So I think I'm gonna have to do it again. I'm gonna really look out for that scene now and just see if I can see any flicker.
You actually pause it and be like, "Oh no, his eyes weren't blinking."
But yeah, I mean, you've had an insane career. Look, taking you back to that moment where you felt completely out of your depth. Now, looking back at that, with the career that you've had, I mean, just to read off the things that you've done. But I mean, I've got a list here of the people you've worked with, and it is insane. And like, I mean, directors alone, you got like Ron Howard, Spielberg, Ridley Scott. You've worked multiple times with Michael Mann. And like, I mean, all these actors you've worked with as well. When you look back to that moment of you in the pool of blood, in your first role, is it kind of mad to think how far you've come from that point?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. It is. You know, I often, you know, I never really... had the luxury, I'd say, of looking back, you know. And in the blink of an eye, you know, it's 32 years later, you know, and sometimes it's nice to take a pause and look back, you know. and appreciate, you know, how far one's journey has been, you know. And when I do look back at it, it's often the main thing that I feel is surprising to me, because it's not what I imagined, you know. And that's that it's truly humbling. Like, you know, and I know that's not necessarily, it might not be surprising to other people, because you hear it often. But for me, I would hear it and I would like not necessarily believe it, or I didn't necessarily know what that meant, you know, to truly be humbled by a moment or by anything, you know. And that's what I feel like. There's like a deep like sense of gratitude, you know, and appreciation, and being humbled. And yet the thing that's wild to me, and I've been saying this a lot lately to friends and whoever is, you know, cares to listen, is that I really do feel like a newcomer. You know, I still feel like a newcomer. You know, I still feel like there's a, you know, and I love that. You know, I love that I can tell that story, and like, it's not too far removed from who I am now. You know, and I'm so appreciative of that, you know, of having it not necessarily being a distant recall, you know, a distant emotional recall. It really is something that, like, yeah, I'm different, you know. Life has happened, you know. I'm definitely grayer, you know. You know, I have a kid, I have a family, so much has happened, you know, in my life. But still, I can like really recall, like when I said I'm getting emotional now thinking about that, it's because I really felt like it was there. It wasn't like, oh, what was that feeling like? You know, I have no idea. You know, it's like there's an immediacy to something that was profound and really impactful to me, that I still, unfortunately, I carry with me.
How did you come to write this book?
What really struck me was that too few books were about my people. Where are our stories? Where's our representation?
Would you give us the pleasure of reading an excerpt?
Yo, Sharonda, girl, you be pregnant again? If I is, Ray Ray is gonna be a real father this time around. Thank you.
Monk, your books are good, but they're not popular. Editors, they want a black book.
They have a black book. I'm black, and it's my book.
You know what I mean.
Look at what they published. Look at what they expect us to write.
I just want to rub their noses in it.
I'd be standing outside in the night.
Deadbeat dads, rappers, crack.
You said you wanted black stuff.
That's black, right?
I see what you're doing. We sold your book.
No.
We believe Mr. Lee has written a bestseller.
It's a joke.
The most lucrative joke you've ever told.
Now, is Stag a pseudonym?
Yeah.
Mr. Lee can't use his real name.
Is this based on your actual life?
Yeah, you think some bitch-ass college boy can come up with that shit?
No, no. No, I don't.
I just actually finished watching your new movie, American Fiction, just literally about half an hour ago.
Really?
What an incredible project, and what a beautifully written script.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for saying that. That's pretty cool. That's right. It just opened in London last Friday, right? It was, it's a shame that they don't come around as often as they do, but because of that, when they do, it feels like a blessing. It feels like a gift, but it's inspiring because it's like there should be more stories like this, but you also don't want to like shortchange the great talents of Cord Jefferson, who was inspired and adapted it from like a kind of genius writer like Percival Everett, so it's like, those guys don't come around too often as well, and then of course just like the just the kismet of it all, of like getting Jeffrey to begin with.
No, he's brilliant,
And
absolutely brilliant.
yeah, so it's like I'm like kind of like feel like this is a miracle of a movie, especially because of the size of it. It was so small. But I'm hungry for more. I'm like, there should, and like the what's happening this current season and last year in particular, like there's a lot of great films out.
There really
So
has been, yeah. There's been some brilliant
there's a nice
films.
way, but thank you for saying all that.
Oh man, no, I really, really enjoyed it. And it's one of those movies when I saw the trailer, I was like, I hope not all the best bits are in the trailer, because it looked really funny. It looked like a great movie. And then watching it, I was like, so many, like there's so many points in there that you feel like you know where it's going to go, and it doesn't. It goes in another direction. But no, I thought it was just brilliant. And I write myself, so seeing the point of the character's view where he's writing and he's got the characters in the room talking to each other, and it's just such a clever way of doing it, which I don't feel like I've seen before. How did you get involved in the project? How was your sort of involvement? How did that start?
Just kind of the standard. My manager held it back from me because I think it was pretty early on when he sensed that there was interest. I think, he knew he had something special in his hands, but he didn't want to like tease me with it and then have me become a pain in the ass to him every day of being like, so what's going on with this? What's going on with this? So he kind of times it strategically of when, balancing how strong the interest is and whether it is really the possibility that an offer will come through bef and how that times with me actually reading it, but he timed it kind of well. He gave me a heads up about it. And luckily I was doing another project at the time, so it wasn't like I was waiting for the phone to ring. I actually had my hands really full with this new Apple series that I was shooting in Miami in the middle of the summer, and that's a whole other story. But turned out great, but it was like I had my hands full. And when I came back home, when I finally wrapped, I came back with COVID,
Oh no.
and it was the first time I had COVID. So I was, just kind of feeling sorry for myself, and that's when my manager sent me the script. And yeah, it was so good. I like to joke that it wiped the COVID out.
it must be a great thing to read first time round, and you just think, wow.
I was it really was. I'm not sure if you know, but it was called Fuck at the time. That was the title.
Oh wow, really? Amazing.
So like I find out more, of course, as I get to know Cord and the whole, and the producers and the whole process of getting it made. But he thought it was an apt working title, but he also admits that, you gotta get the attention of folks, and so he thought that might help. It definitely got the attention of my manager and people that he was talking to, because when he first gave me the heads up about the script, he he prefaced it by saying, and even that step was, I knew it was kind of special. Cause like he either sends it and says, tell me what you think, or I think this, I think that, or there's just an offer. And so for him to like prep me for it, I thought, okay, that's already special. So he says that, yeah, there's a script and, you know, everyone's talking about it, you know, it's called Fuck, and it's, and people are like flipping out over it, you know? So I could understand why, as soon as I opened it up, and then I'm reading it and I'm just completely floored by it. It's like, it's one of the best scripts I ever read. And you know, it reads how it plays. I think it's different, of course, and Cord will speak to that more, but whatever we hoped, or whatever I was like floored by and what impressed me by, we were actually going for in shooting it, and it lands on film. That being said, I didn't think it was as funny as it plays. Like, I knew there was a lot of humor there, but I really didn't think it was, like, when I was reading reactions, because I couldn't go to Toronto Film Festival. I'm sorry, I'm all over the place. Because of the strike, I couldn't go to the festival. So I was, you know, really curious how the film was going to premiere. So I was resorted to Twitter, and the reactions from folks off the bat was how laugh out funny it was. And I was like, that's great. And there was like this really kind of awesome enjoyment, this joy that I could read from the tweets. And I was like, wow, this is pretty cool, you know, because the thing that impressed me the most were the more serious issues that it tackles, and the more heart-rending stuff that's in it between the family, you know, and the way it was, how it was written, you know, and how those issues were being dealt with. You know, it just was specific, it was rich, it was real, you know, it was honest. And it's, I don't know why, but it's tricky. It's a tricky thing to not be so heavy-handed with a lot of those topics, you know? And so there was this really beautiful, delicate thing. And of course, the satire aspect of it helps balance that off a lot, you know? So anyway, so I was just like, I was just like, wow, you know, I was just amazed. I was like, wow, this is pretty special that this is the reaction. But going back to my initial thoughts as I was reading it was my character, and how, you know, I've been at it for 30 years, you know, over 30 years now, and I've been making a living at it, and I've been working a lot, and those roles don't come around often for me, you know, or I gotta wait and say no to a lot of other stuff that is tough to say no to, because, you know, I got a family and I got bills to pay. My kid's about to go to college.
And, time to get a job.
I always knew it was expensive, but they didn't tell me how, like, it continues becoming more and more expensive.
it gets you know, worse, so it's like,
holy, yeah, man, it's crazy. So anyway, but you know, I like to think that I have a range, and that the thing that drew me to this profession and the arts was more than just one thing or two things, you know, but it's a lot of things. And in that way of thinking, as an actor, at least, it's a lot of different roles and characters and stories and genres. And I want to do it all, you know, and that's what drew me to the theater more when I was younger, was I was able to like access that part of being more well-rounded as an actor and producer, and I had more power in terms of, you know, developing stories and scripts and plays. And so as you can tell by how much I'm talking, that was just like the first read, like all those things were like, you know, pouring through me.
Did you as well, because obviously your character, it doesn't really give anything away for anyone that hasn't seen it, but obviously played Jeffrey Wright's agent, literary agent. Did you draw anything from having, you know, you're obviously your manager, your agents as an actor? Did you take anything from them in inspiration for the part?
Yeah, I did. You know, again, because I've been doing it as long as I have, you know, I have a lot of experience dealing with representation and agents and managers. You know, I've been really lucky and loyal to basically one team. But even that, you know, I drew the similarities between Arthur and Monk, in that there is a loyalty there. Like he felt like he has been his longtime agent, you know. So I drew a lot from the relationship and the dynamic between my agent and myself, and how, you know, it's, yeah, the thing that we see most with agents when they're portrayed is definitely true and valid, you know, and that's that thing of like, you know, getting the deal done, you know, and selling and getting your commission, you know. So there's that at play, which I, you know, I kind of had a handle on what that is all about, you know. But the other stuff that was more interesting to me was, and that's also plot driven, like there's a beating pulse around the sale of a book in the movie, so, you know, and it's well written, so I just gotta like be truthful to the words and the moment, you know. And a lot of my work is taken care of, but I think underneath that, it's the other thing that I'm referring to, which is the relationship, the loyalty factor. Why is it that they're together for as long as they are? And like my agent and myself, like, you know, it's often, you know, he takes the role of, oftentimes, of a friend, you know, a therapist, you know, when I'm down, you know, a counselor, when I'm bewildered by the many questions this business brings up, and confidant, you know, and many other roles that an agent plays, you know, and specifically with American Fiction, what was also interesting is that when I got the script and shortly after the offer came in, it was only like 10 days before they wanted me to fly out. And I love research. I love rehearsals. Wow. And Cord was already in Boston in pre-production. So I had a Zoom with him after I accepted the offer, which happened in like 2 seconds.
Yes.
You know, and of course there's millions of questions in that Zoom, which lasted about an hour with him. And they wanted to fly me out. I was like the second day of shooting, you know, so that was like in a week. Like, you know, after talking to him. So I got in on a Thursday night. Friday I had wardrobe and hair and makeup and all that stuff to do. And then Saturday, I had dinner with Cord and Jermaine Johnson, the producer on it, and Cord's longtime manager. And that was, I was maybe expecting Jeffrey there, or I was hoping that I'd see Jeffrey at some point, you know, over the weekend.
To break the ice, for sure. Oh, right, really?
Yeah. Yeah, I saw Jeffrey for the first time during that shoot.
Oh, wow.
In the makeup trailer, you know, minutes before we're in front of a camera. And that was all, I mean, it wasn't because no one wanted to rehearse, and it was just that was what was available, you know, like there, you know, it was kind of a miracle to get the it done. As great as the script was, you know, I think it was like one group said yes, you know,
everyone
was saying how great it is, but they can't do it. You know what I mean? And
they're all kicking themselves now. The guys that said,
yeah, man,
and they're kicking themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the folks that said yes, it's like, we can only do it for this much. So, mm-hmm. So there was only 25-day shoot. It was only a 25-day shoot.
Wow.
So I understood all that going in, as much as I was scared, and you know, and I wanted the rehearsal and all that, but the saving grace was that I knew Jeffrey prior. We had a bit of a history, you know, and it went way back to I know these dates really well because I'm presenting an award to him in a couple of hours.
Oh, wow. That's good. You've done homework.
Yeah. 27 years. We first met in 97. And we didn't know each other really well, but through the years and running around in the same theater circles, we got to know each other a bit, you know? And of course I admired and respected his work through the years, and we would see each other in plays, and I like to think that, you know, he might have also kind of thought good things about my career, you know, and so I leaned heavily on that. Mm-hmm. when we got in the room and the camera started rolling, and just trusted that the script was as good as we all felt and believed, and did that thing that, as actors, I think as any creative form of art, it's about letting go, you know, it's about playing. And we did a lot of that. We did a lot of letting go and playing.
The chemistry between you guys, I was going to say, I thought you were going to say that you'd not met him before. And I was thinking, wow, because the chemistry really, obviously really works. And it feels like you guys have known each other for years, but now you've given away the trick that you did know each other for years. And it really does show on screen, though. The relationship just feels lived in, you know?
Hello?
Hello, Paula.
Arthur, so wonderful to hear from you. I hope that you are with the man of the hour.
I am indeed. He's right here next to me.
Mr. Lee?
Yeah, this is he.
Oh, really?
Goddammit.
Right, okay. I was a little confused at first, but...
You can know each other for years, and it can backfire as well. Like, you yeah. never, you know, like, you never know, you know, like, yeah. That's the thing, you know, we leaned into that, or, you know, I did, but there's also like, you know, there's a great deal of the unknown and just seeing what happens, you know.
Check out the Patreon at patreon.com/lifeandfilm, where you'll get episodes early and uncut, amongst other treats. And don't forget to follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you enjoy this episode, please leave us a positive rating. Add us on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok at Life in Film Pod, and find our video episodes on YouTube by searching Elliot James Langridge Life in Film. Essentially, please like and subscribe everything. It makes a huge difference. Thank you.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Do you work in the film industry? Are you freelance? Or perhaps you have a 9-to-5? No matter what you do, mental health affects us all. I struggled early on in my career with the uncertainty of if and when I would ever work again, struggling to pay my bills, or simply with anxiety. Don't know about you, but being an actor, it's very important for me to maintain structure in the down times. And I found not only exercise, but talking to someone, for me, was a game changer. And so Life in Film has partnered with BetterHelp to provide you with access to the largest online therapy service in the world. And it can all be done from the comfort of your own home, from a phone, tablet, or laptop. No commute, cutting down travel costs, and most importantly, it's affordable. With over 1,000 therapists in the UK, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. If you need someone to talk to and you're thinking of giving therapy a go, BetterHelp is a great option. And being a listener of the podcast, you get 10% off. That's 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/lifeandfilm. That's betterhelp.com/lifeandfilm.
And back to the show.
I think we as I think anyone, but especially in the arts, you know, what's important to me, what I know is important in terms of carrying, in terms of immersing oneself in whatever that project may be, is letting go. Like when I said that thing about how my approach and Jeffrey's approach, I think, was to that scene, and what was, I think, the key to it, what in terms of letting go, was really embracing not knowing. You know, and what was amazing about Core Jefferson's, as smart as he is and as talented as he is, it was his first time directing a movie, and he was still confident and had enough trust and belief in who he hired to not feel like he needed to have the answers for everything. And or make believe like he did, which I sometimes see in folks, and it can get them in trouble, because you just smell that, you know. It's like, you don't know what you're talking about, you know. And you're just like wasting a lot of time talking about something that you have no idea what you're talking about is, and is of no use for what we got to do right now. And for Core to be like, you know what, I don't know. Like, I think you guys know more about this moment. So I feel like we should do another take. I don't know exactly what to say, but I think you guys might know. So let's do another take. Are you guys cool with that? And Jeffrey and I would be like, yeah. And we both, I think, felt like we did have something else to offer in a moment, you know. But we didn't talk it to death. You know, he was like, okay, bam, bam, and let's do it, you know. And so that thing of not knowing, I think, is key when it comes to why I enjoy that thing of feeling like a newcomer and it not being a weird thing, you know.
Well, the person that said to you, obviously early on, don't lose that greenness, don't lose that excitement and that enthusiasm, don't be jaded by the industry, you obviously haven't, and you've still got that, which is that's so great that you can retell that story with such joy, and remember it so well as well. I really enjoyed that. I thought that's a great story. I'm going to retell that story as if, you know, it's my own. But no, that's so good. And I can't believe that the fact that American Fiction is his first film as a director, that's, it doesn't get much better than that. I mean, that's a knock it out of the park kind of that's insane, isn't it? But it sounds like he dealt with you guys in such a great way, where it was like, you know, you guys have been doing this for years, and you know what you're doing, I'll step out of your way. Sounds like the way to go, to be honest.
Especially when you when someone like him knows that story really well. And like what we felt really confident was that he knew that story. It was in him. It was in his DNA. Like there were so many parallels to the book, and it's obvious that he's a great writer, and he had a vision for it. He had a real vision for how to tell that story, you know? And so like, you know, I think the respect was mutual, you know? And it was what made the collaborative nature of actually doing it so enjoyable, you know, was that there was this, like, everyone had a deep passion and care for wanting to tell this story. It was like, and I think it extended to the crew as well, you know, and that's something that is special, you know. And so the communal aspect of why we were doing what we were doing helped and enriched the collaboration. It just enriched the conversation, the being around each other, you know. It was just like it all fed into this beautiful, special thing that that was a major ingredient in what people are seeing right now in the movie.
Well, you mentioned earlier as well that it's done so, what's the word, like, delicately, and so it's so well written, because I mean the subject matter and some of the things that happen in the movie, I don't want to give away to the audience that haven't seen it, but things that happen that are pretty dark, and it could have been quite a depressing movie with some of the elements, and you know, the family dynamic and everything else, but I don't know what it was. Obviously the performances, the editing, the composer, the music, I don't know what it was, but the whole thing is lifted, and it doesn't feel light, but it's so watchable and so easy to digest. It's not a hard watch, even though some of the things that happen in it are quite hard.
I know. There are so many layers to it, you know, and there can be themes in it that are hard to talk about, and people may feel uncomfortable talking about. But the story, the package of it, is so singular and it's so tight. And I like to say it's like, it's a movie. It's like all the wonderful things that we hope, and romantic things we hope to get out of a movie, is what this movie is what this film is, you know. And even that is like, well, what do you mean it's a movie? Like, we know that, you know. But it's like, yeah, but it's all of the magic and dreams and joy and rides that we want to be transported by in a movie. It is. And it delivers on those accounts. And that's pretty magical.
100%. You just want to hang out with them for longer.
Yeah.
You don't want it to end.
I actually have said that. I was like, as much as I love being Arthur the agent, and I do, I just want to be a part of that family.
That horrifically, the family that's all over the place, but it's done in such a way that you want to hang out with them anyway, even if they're all a mess.
Doing all kinds of mad humor, things. The humor is I think a big factor in and what that appeal is of wanting to hang out with them. You know, I mean, you know, laughter is the best medicine, right? Mm, so, 100%. And a similar ride of a movie in terms of humor when it comes to some difficult topics that I was a part of was Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah, amazing film.
And so, like, there are lots of similarities in terms of the tone, the tone of the film, you know, and like that thing that's like, it's so specific, it's so like told with this specificity, and it's executed with a lot of humor, you know, but it's also like there's a lot of pain in there and honesty.
And also I think as well, a bit like Silver Linings Playbook, it's a film that has a lot of names and a lot of actors that you're very aware of. You know who they are, and you kind of have this own, I have a preconception of what they're going to be like in a movie. And kind of like with American Fiction, I think a lot of the actors are very well known, yourself and Jeffrey Wright, but yet you're completely sucked in by the characters. The minute it starts, you're not even thinking about who the actors are. And Silver Linings Playbook is like that as well. You know De Niro, you know, the people in that movie, but then it's just, you're sucked in. Bradley Cooper, and suddenly he's that character.
I'm not sure how we're doing on time.
I hadn't been paying attention. We should probably, you've got to go off and give an award to Jeffrey. So you better.
And that's the only reason why I'm a little like conscious of it. Because I do have to deliver that award to him. Because if not, I could talk to you all day, man. Most embarrassing moments, yeah. Every day, no. In Silver Linings, I love David O. Russell, but he's like. And part of the reason, besides being a fan of all of the movies I watched before Silver Linings, which were all incredible, I just never worked with him. And his style is unlike any other style. Like, a big part of what he does is he'll just keep the cameras rolling. And sometimes he's like behind the camera and the cameraman, and he's just like watching the action and rarely yells cut, and we'll just continue playing moments, and even when the lines have ended, he'll go back to the top, and sometimes he'll shout out lines to you that are completely new. And in character, in the moment, you hear him say, okay, now say this, and you have to say it. Well, there was a scene in the parking lot during the pregame stuff of the Eagles game, of the football game. And we had a lot of little scenes in that, which some of it was created that day in that manner. And one of them was, it's not in the movie, but the moment is, but it was much longer, and the scene starts, there might be parts of it, but I just remember shooting a lot more than what's in there, where we're actually riffing on examples of Silver Linings, you know. I can't even think of one, but that's how it starts, and we're just like riffing, and then he sees someone who he thinks is Jennifer Lawrence's character, or no, his ex-wife, who he's obsessed about, right? And he's like, and I'm like, what's going on? And it's behind me, that the vision, and he's like, look over there. And I look, and Dave is like, what, are you kidding me? That's not her. And I'm like, and I have a stutter. I had a really pronounced stutter as a kid that I've, you know, fortunately have like, you know, dealt with, but I still have it, right? And it comes out in a lot of times in moments of anxiety, and occasionally with certain sounds. And whatever the line was that he asked me to say started with the sound that triggers my stutter. So I couldn't say it because I didn't want my stutter to come out. And I'm just waiting and I'm trying to relax and I'm trying to like go through my process of how I overcome stuttering. Mm. But it's taking too long for David, who's repeating it over and over to me.
Oh,
and
man, I'm just like,
and Shay Whigham, the great actor, Shay Whigham, really good friend of mine.
Yeah, we had him on the show. He's brilliant.
Oh, yeah, he's awesome. Yeah, he's awesome. We've done like five movies together. Including that. And he's watching. He's not in the scene. He's just watching. And he's like, oh, man, look at Johnny. I mean, he tells me this afterwards. He's like, oh, man, look at Johnny. Johnny's not going to say anything until he fucking feels it. And I'm just like, and he's like, say it. David's like, say it. Say it. And I finally say the line, you know.
Oh my God.
But I was so embarrassed, you know, because like, you know, we did it or whatever. And later that night, we had dinner. The cast was together, and I'm like, David, I have to apologize, you know. And he's like, what for? He's like, well, in that line, you had me say that line, and I wouldn't say it in time, and you know, kind of screwed up with the scene a bit. And he's like, don't worry about it. But what happened? Like, why didn't you say it? And I was like, well. And I told him the story, you know, I told him about
hats off to you.
And he's like, oh man, don't worry. Oh, that's, I'm sorry that I like, you know, that I like was so aggressive towards you. I'm like, no, it's cool. I really wanted to say it, man. It's like, and Shay's there, and Shay's like, yeah, David, I was there. And I'm like, oh man, look at Johnny. He's not gonna say it until he fucking feels it.
I love that. And he's not gonna say it until he fucking feels it. That's great.
Yeah, and we all had a great laugh.
Mate, fair play to you though. Like having it, if you know, you've dealt with a stutter and you know, being an actor, I mean, that must be something you really had to overcome. And I mean, I wish we had more time to go into that, but it's been wicked having you on, man. Thank you so much. And I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan.
Oh, thanks so much, Ali. Well, now I'm a big fan of yours. So hopefully I can come back on and we can wrap 100%, some more.
100%.
Yeah, thank you so much. Take care, brother.
Cheers,
thank
man.
You. You too.
Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Thank you to our guest, John. Thank you to Independent PR. And as always, thank you to our sponsor, BetterHelp.